From inside the castle in Owings Mills, Maryland, it is the Banner Ravens podcast. Paul Mancano and Jonah Schaefer, who's still fixing his chair, demanding that we use the comfortable ones instead of the cheap plastic ones. You're too good for those, aren't you, Jonas?
Lumbar support. It becomes very important at my age.
At your age, your advanced age. You're no longer a prospect these days, Jonas. Neither am I. I think I'm beyond that age. I'm even beyond the Brandon Whedon age.
No one's interested in you.
No.
At all.
Not at all. Anyway, well, hopefully you're interested in watching this live at 12:10 a.m. Live on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, or you could be listening to us after the fact on any of your favorite podcast platforms. And if you are, by the way, give us a like, give us a thumbs up, write us a good review, and I will read it out here on the show. Jonas, we are here to recap day two of the NFL draft. You couldn't come up with a word of the day for today. That's okay. We'll go ahead and skip that segment, but let's talk about the two guys that the Ravens came away with. They addressed offensive line with their second round pick, taking Roger Rosengarten out of Washington with the 62nd overall pick. And then in the third round with the 93rd overall pick, they took Penn State edge Adisa Isaac. So let's start first and foremost with Roger Rosengarten, because this was a position that I thought coming into the draft, the Ravens might have to attack on day one. We saw that big run of tackles all go off the board before the Ravens picked all the way up until 29. They go with a cornerback, Nate Wiggins, in round one. But in round two, they address the O-line, and they get a player who has a fair amount of good experience for a team that was just in the national championship game.
Yeah, I mean, just hearing Eric DaCosta describe how the mechanics of that second round played out, pretty nip and tuck. He didn't say it by name, which was kind of interesting because he gave out all the other details that would let us put the pieces together. But it sounded like Kansas City was trying to trade up from, I guess, 64 to 62 to take a tackle of unknown name. And the Ravens, it sounded like, were considering it. They were definitely in touch or in talks with the Chiefs. And either they backed out of it or the Chiefs backed out of it. And they're glad that they did, because they didn't know that the Chiefs were going to go get a tackle. Kingsley Suamatia is who they ended up taking after trading up with the 49ers, number 63. And the Ravens stuck at 62, picked Roger Rosengarten. And that was a guy that Eric DaCosta said they had their sights set on from the very, very start of the draft. I mean, I think it's a pretty interesting contrast to what might be the other option there at right tackle, because in Roger Rosengarten, you have a guy who ran a sub 5:40, who weighs about, you know, 315 pounds soaking wet. And then you have Daniel Faalele, who is listed perhaps generously on the Ravens roster as 380 pounds and probably needs a sundial to run a 40-yard dash. So, every time we have kind of probed John Harbaugh about what direction this offense might be headed in, we haven't gotten a whole lot of clarity. We think that it would be more in line with what Todd Monken was running at Georgia, which is more zone schemes, more effective screen game. That was a problem for the Ravens last year. They ran a lot of screens. They just weren't very good. They were kind of hit or miss with their zone schemes, but you have a great mover in Tyler Linderbaum. When Ronnie Stanley is healthy, he's also very agile in space. And now you have a guy who can run a 4.940 at 305 pounds. So you would think that that would lend itself more to, you know, side to side, east west blocking, as opposed to north south, you know, taking a double team on or double team on or pulling and hitting through the A gap. So we don't know exactly what will come of this Ravens rushing offense. We don't know what will come of a passing offense, but it is very, very interesting that on the one hand you have Daniel Faalele, and on the other hand you have literally the diametrically opposite prototype in Roger Rosengarten.
Well, wouldn't their addition of Derrick Henry also, though, lead you to believe that they are still looking at a more traditional, less side-to-side, more north-south kind of offense here?
Well, I'm defined for traditional, because Derrick Henry ran a lot of zone schemes in Tennessee.
But up the middle, I mean, he's not exactly known as a pass catcher.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the word traditional should not be in the Ravens' dictionary when it comes to their offense, because traditional offenses did not have someone like Lamar Jackson at the controls.
Fair.
there weren't a whole lot of dudes named Sonny back in the day running the read option.
Right. But if you are blocking for Lamar Jackson, you have to be able to sustain a lot of your blocks because Lamar is going to sit back there and he's going to scramble when he needs to. And it was interesting that Roger Rosengarten got the question of how he feels like he is prepared to block for a quarterback like Lamar Jackson. And he mentioned Michael Penix, of course. So essentially, Rosengarten was the right tackle in Washington, which was the blind side for Penix, who is a lefty. So can play right tackle, but the idea is, in theory, he could be playing left tackle as well. Ravens obviously have Ronnie Stanley at left tackle in the near term. They have Falele as their, you know, not set in stone, but as the leader in the clubhouse right now to be their right tackle. But maybe that's where Rosengarten starts out at right tackle and maybe eventually moves over to left tackle. But anyway, he was asked about how his college experience could help him block for somebody like Lamar. And he said, look, in practice, you know, wasn't used a whole lot in games, but Penix was a guy who did use his athleticism and scramble a fair amount. And his ability to, his experience in blocking for those type of plays helped him a lot. Penix did not scramble a lot, and he was not known as a great runner. Now, he certainly maybe has the ability to. He just didn't use it a whole lot. At Washington. He has the athleticism to do that. So we just haven't seen a whole lot of tape of Rosengarten blocking in those type of moments.
Yeah, and I think I'm glad that you bring up the differences between Washington's offense and Ravens' offense, because obviously I think people will point to the PFF stat that I certainly retweeted about him not having allowed a sack these past two seasons at Washington. Mm-hmm. But I want everyone to account for the fact that one, Michael Penix, one of his many virtues coming into the draft was he was a guy who was great at limiting the conversion of pressures into sacks. You know, that is very much a quarterback stat. That's what makes Josh Allen so great. That's what makes Patrick Mahomes so great. That's what makes Lamar Jackson a little bit frustrating, because he, even though he is a Houdini in the backfield there, he still kind of finds himself just turning those pressures into sacks by not getting rid of the ball as quickly as he should. And Michael Penix, his average time to throw last year, 2.68 seconds. That would have been, according to this tweet that I'm looking at right now, the sixth fastest time to throw in the NFL. So not only was he great at limiting the times that he was pressured, letting those be turned into sacks, but he was also just getting rid of the ball super quickly. And it makes sense, because you have Roma Dunze, you have Jalen McMillan, you have Polk, all these guys who are getting open or who can turn those 50-50 balls into 80-20 balls. Lamar is a little bit more deliberate. He likes to see things through a little bit more. He likes to improvise a little bit more. So obviously you would rather have a guy with zero sacks over the last 2 years than 10 sacks over the past 2 years, but it is a very, very different environment, what he was doing in Washington's offense and what he might have to do in the Ravens.
Yeah, it's all contextual there. He did win the Joe Moore Award, which is given to the nation's top offensive lineman, in part because he did not allow a single sack in his college career. He really didn't start until his penultimate season, 2022, 13 games in 2022.
You say the Joe Moore Award is for the team, not for an individual player. So it goes for the Washington team.
Oh, Washington team. Yeah. Right. So along with his other offensive lineman, he won that Joe Moore Award. 13 games as a starter in 2022, then all 15 in 2023, played in that national championship game. And that might've been his worst game as a college player, a game that both Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh attended, because of course John's brother was coaching in that game. Eric DaCosta said he wasn't really watching as a scout too much in that game. He was taking in the atmosphere, maybe you know, grabbing some buffet in the suite, you know, maybe chatting up with some celebrities perhaps. But then it was after the fact that he really dove into the players in that game more in depth. That was a tough game. If you watched the tape of that game, Jonas, what was your takeaway as to maybe why Rosengarten struggled in that game? He was matched up with a lot of different players that maybe had a lot of different styles. Sometimes he was matched up against Chris Jenkins, who was taken tonight, I believe, in the second round, who is, you know, an outstanding talent from Michigan. But did you have any major concerns in terms of watching his final, Rosengarten's final collegiate game?
It just seemed like it was one of those games, even just one of those quarters, just looking at some of the recaps of that game before we hopped on here. And I think in a guy who was doing an evaluation of Rosengarten as a prospect said that he went back and watched the tape, and it was three quarters of perfectly fine play for perfectly fine play. And then fourth quarter comes, and there are a couple penalties, a couple bad pass sets, and things just kind of spiraled for him. And obviously it didn't really carry over into the pre-draft process because he goes to the Senior Bowl a couple weeks later, dominates, gets on the radar of the Ravens, does a great job, becomes a guy that they covet. And I think it's interesting because he is a guy who, maybe because he doesn't have a whole lot of sand in his pants, you know, 6'5", 310, 315, he has to get a little bit creative. he has to get a little bit creative in how he wins those pass sets. And if you want to just kind of see how unique he is as a prospect, just Google Rosengarten 46 special, I think, which is what he calls one of his pass sets, where, you know, there are a bunch of different pass sets that kind of range in conservativeness to aggressiveness. And this is on the absolute far end of aggression. He is basically running at the defensive end or the edge rusher or the outside linebacker as soon as the ball is snapped almost. He takes a step back and then he just comes full speed ahead like it's a Red Rover. It's insane. You almost never see tackles that aggressive. That would
scare me, honestly. Yeah, It'd be a little dangerous.
And I think that's the whole point. It's to knock guys off physically, mentally, spiritually, every kind of adverb. And you have to wonder, when he gets to this level, when he's going up against guys who are not only physically more advanced than him, but also technically more savvy than him, is he going to try to pull that kind of fastball on a Myles Garrett,
right,
on a TJ Watt, even an Adafi Owe? You know, is he going to be able to have as deep a bag of tricks as he did at Washington,
right,
and be successful?
Yeah, I mean, does that feel kind of like a trick play almost? Like, is that something that could only work X number of times, do you think? And once it's kind of found out, it's found out?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something you probably pull out once or twice a game.
Right. In terms of the comparison to Kingsley Suamata, has taken one pick later, I think it's going to be interesting because those two will now be linked for a while, and Suamata is a guy that we mentioned a lot during the pre-draft process. In terms of the athleticism also, scouts do say that Roger Rosengarten does have a quote-unquote limited athletic profile, in part because he doesn't have quite the same length that some guys have. As you said, Jonas, got ourselves a T-Rex in terms of arm length. And there's also talk that could maybe move to guard, which, look, the Ravens just...
John Harbaugh brought that up.
Yeah.
We didn't bring that up. I think that was... John Harbaugh's default position is usually to say that a guy can do a lot of different things,
right,
even if maybe they can't. See Patrick Ricard perhaps lining up as a guard.
Sure. But it was also discussed, I mean, that was also in his NFL.com scouts profile, was that maybe he could move to guard because, maybe he doesn't quite have the length to be a tackle. Do you think that that's a spot that we could see him maybe sooner rather than later because Zeitler and John Simpson are gone?
Probably not sooner, just because we haven't seen him play there at all. I mean, he was a left tackle and then he was a right tackle. And
right,
I don't, the Senior Bowl can kind of be a bit of a, science experiment for some of these linemen who maybe aren't earmarked for the tackle spots at that next level. And I don't think he lined up at all at guard. I think all of his one-on-one reps were him matching up against edge rushers. So if he is a guard, then I imagine we'd find out probably pretty soon because maybe it's just a flagrant disaster in training camp. But again, that's a fine gamble to take, considering all the guys that we were, linking to the Ravens in the second round, your Christian Haynes, your Dominic Puni, all these guys. At least you have a guy now who has a reasonable chance of turning into a decent tackle. And if not, because of his athletic profile, because of his build and everything like that, maybe he turns into a fine guard as well.
I've never heard anybody use the term flagrant disaster as much as
I just keep getting stuck on it. I gotta get more sleep or a new word.
Can we make t-shirts that say flagrant disaster?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll sell two of them.
It sounds like a penalty. I mean, I would like to see that called at some point.
It's the Stanley Cup playoffs, baby.
Yeah. All right. So that is their second round pick, is offensive tackle Roger Rosengarten. Let's get to their third round pick. So they stay at both picks. They don't trade up. They don't trade down. Because they don't trade up because, as Eric DaCosta would say, that's just not what they do. So they stick and pick at 93, and they take Penn State edge Adisa Isaac with the 93rd overall pick. He's 6'4", 247 pounds. He had just 3 sacks combined in his first 2 seasons. Then he tore his Achilles before the 2021 season, missed that entire campaign, and then broke out in his penultimate season there. I keep saying penultimate because I don't know how to describe with a lot of these COVID / redshirt years. I don't know what year these guys end up being. It was his second to last year. I don't know if that's technically his first senior year or
fourth year.
Fourth year, I guess.
That sounds like describing Virginia students.
Yeah. Yeah. So he had 11 tackles for loss and 4 sacks in 2022. Then 16 tackles for loss and 7.5 sacks as a senior. He's a team captain. DaCosta mentioned his great length, those heavy hands, sand in his hands, maybe. I want to try to coin something tonight, Jonas.
Okay.
The only thing that we have seen from scouts is, he needs to maybe improve his anchor strength. The length is there. The athleticism, for the most part, seems to be there. And he's got great recognition and awareness when it comes to diagnosing plays. What did you think of this pick of Adisa Isaac in the third round?
Yeah, makes total sense. I think he was on the consensus big board at about number 66. So for the Ravens to get him at, 93 overall is pretty good value, I think. He was a guy who I think maybe early on projects as more of a situational pass rusher because he is like below the 10th percentile in weight, but he's got some juice. You know, he's got a nonstop motor. I think, you know, asking Eric DaCosta about how the evaluations of these edge rushers change when you have a Chuck Smith on board.
Yeah.
Not only is he studying these guys, but he's probably interfacing with the, you know, front office to say, I think I can really help this guy more than I can help this guy because this guy is a little bit more capped, you know, fundamentally, technique-wise. If you bring me a guy like Adisa Isaac or a guy like the Eagles took one pick after in Jalix Hunt,
yeah,
I can do more for him than I can for Joe Schmo. And I think that's a good bet to make. I mean, obviously, you know, Chuck Smith is not a miracle worker, but I think we can safely assume that he's one of the better pass rushing teachers in the NFL. So why not get a guy who has a little bit more room to grow, maybe a little bit lower floor because he doesn't have that run game stiffness, bring him along. You know, there's, I think, good depth there now, assuming that everyone is healthy. And I know that's a big F with David Ojabo and Adafe dealing with the stuff that they've dealt with. But Kyle Van Noy, Adafe Owe, David Ojabo, Tavius Robinson, Malik Ham, if he's able to do anything this year, you throw in Adisa Isaac into that mix, that's a really nice, you know, 3D basically at both spots.
He also has a cool story on the NFL's YouTube page about how his siblings all have special needs. And it's a really awesome story. So if you have time to watch that and just see who Adisa Isaac is as a person, I would recommend that. I'm going to put you on the spot here, Jonas, and ask for these last two picks in Roger Rosengarten and Adisa Isaac. Last night with when we were talking about Nate Wiggins, we were comparing him to Marlon Humphrey in his rookie year and saying, you know, what would be reasonable expectations for how much he would play? We said, like, if he had 55% of the defensive snaps like Marlon Humphrey did in his rookie year, that'd be considered a success. For Roger Rosengarten and for Adisa Isaac, let's start with Rosengarten. What percentage chance do you think that he's starting at right tackle in week one of the 2024 season?
I'd say like 20%.
Really?
Yeah.
Think it's the money's on Falele right now?
I think so. And I know obviously there's a lot of hand-wringing over what Daniel Falele was last year, but he was better last year than he was the year before. And so that leads me to believe that he'll be better next year than he was this past year. You know, he is new to football. He's getting his body to where it needs to be. He's learning the game. Hopefully everything's slowing down for him. Hopefully he's, you know, doing what he needs to address some of those weak spots, to get a little bit more mobile, to get a little bit more, you know, zest in his punch on some of those pass sets. Hopefully he's figuring out how to leverage and, you know, his technique so he can get a little bit more push on those run blocks. And, you know, I wouldn't say he's the overwhelming favorite to start at right tackle, but I do think it is very, very tough for a guy to come into the NFL and be a week one starter as a rookie. I mean, you know, Orlando Brown, who by year two or year three in Baltimore was a Pro Bowl tackle, did not start until midway through that rookie season. And, you know, obviously Orlando Brown had the physical deficiencies. He was a little bit more plodding. He was a much better run blocker to start than he was a pass blocker. But playing with Lamar Jackson, having him as your quarterback, I think does a lot for you as a pass protector, because you just kind of change the gravity against these pass rushers. You are making them come after you in certain ways that you wouldn't treat a Aaron Rodgers or a Marcus Mariota, or, you know, I don't know, like a name your random AFC North quarterback,
right?
You know, even a Joe Burrow. So I guess it's a little bit interesting that they did go with someone who was relatively light, because like we talked about during the pre-draft process, are you going to be confident in a guy like that being able to anchor and hold down the fort against guys who are only trying to do the mush rush, collapse the pocket with strength, not with speed? That's kind of an interesting gamble, I think, to take. But obviously the Ravens love Rosengarten's potential to get out in space, do stuff in screen game, be an effective run blocker, get to that second level, and just wipe out guys. So I think it's going to be a tough road for him to hoe to get to week one startingdom, but you never know.
And for Adisa Isaac, this is a defensive line. This is pass rush that is without Jadeveon Clowney, who had double-digit sacks last year. This is without... They brought back Kyle Van Noy, who had a great season last year, but, you know, getting older, 33. They're hoping that David Ojabo is going to be fully healthy, but never a guarantee. And they're hoping Odafe Oweh takes a step up in his fourth season. What percentage of defensive snaps in Zach Orr's defense? Give me a range. Do you think that Adisa Isaac could play?
Oh, man. I don't know.
35?
No, because Tavius Robinson didn't get a whole lot. I mean, I guess Adisa Isaac is coming in with a better rep. I don't know. He didn't apparently do a whole lot of special team stuff at Penn State. And I know that's not the question that you asked, but I would imagine that would be something that he would be ticketed for, considering his athletic gifts. Mm-hmm. You would think that would be a possibility. I mean, why don't you vamp while I look up what Tavius Robinson did last year in terms of snap share?
Yeah, I mean, I can vamp. I mean, I feel like it might be between 25 and 35.
He played 29% of the defensive snaps last year.
Okay.
And he played in all 17 games.
So how good am I? Outstanding. I do think, I mean, I still think that this pass rush could add somebody. And look, it wasn't until July last year that we saw Clowney get signed. So I think that maybe there might be another veteran that they're going to add to this mix, and that would mess with the equation here.
I would say that, I guess, the distinction that I would make between the Tavius Robinson situation and the Adisa Isaac situation is there weren't a lot of like solid run stopping outside linebackers on that team last year. Like, I thought Adafe would be better as a run defender than he was. That wasn't the case. So you would have Clowney being a nice edge setter. And then we knew Tavius Robinson could also be a nice edge setter. So he was not playing a lot of third and long, obvious pass rushing situations. You flip the coin to Adisa Isaac. We know that Kyle Van Noy can be your situational pass rusher. You can line him up inside. You can line him up outside. We know that David Ojabo at this point is probably more comfortable rushing the passer than he is stopping the run. And then you also have Odafe Oweh there, who I know the sacks weren't there last year, but his pressure numbers were good.
Yep.
His pass rush win rate was good. So if
just
you are
twisting guys around, just bring him down. That's the only thing.
I know.
Finishing some of those sacks for Odafe.
So if Adisa Isaac is, let's say, fourth on that pass rush, you know, edge chart, how many snaps realistically is he getting if he's not playing on early downs?
Right. Yeah. One more thing that we should discuss, by the way, what didn't happen today. The Ravens did not draft a wide receiver. Now, these are three positions that, you know, the Ravens have drafted the positions that we thought they would. We thought the first four positions that they would target would be, in some order, cornerback, edge rusher, offensive line, and wide receiver. So the one that gets left out is wide receiver. There is one guy that is falling through the cracks. Oregon wide receiver Troy Franklin, who at one point during this process, Jonas, was talked about as a potential first rounder. Now, the last couple weeks, that talk has died down. I'm not sure exactly how much he fits this team, and the Ravens are on the clock again, I believe, at 1:13. So there's a little bit of time before, you know, they're back on the clock. They have, as we've said a million times, they have the ammo that they need to move up, but they also, that's not who they are. Maybe they go up and get Troy Franklin, the one guy who seems to be slipping through the cracks. Or beyond that, I mean, it's Brendan Rice, it's Javon Baker, and then, you know, not the best group after that. So I think Franklin stands out above the rest, unless there is some kind of reason that he has been slipping that we're unaware of.
Yeah, I was searching on Twitter to no avail, but to see what might have happened there. I think probably the most likely answer is just bombed interviews or terrible medicals, but I feel like the medicals would have probably come out at some point during the pre-draft process, like it did for, you know, Johnny Newton, for Troy Faiutanu. So
sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes stuff gets, you know, buried.
Yeah. And you know, he wouldn't be, just because of how relatively slight he is, he wouldn't be the X receiver, which I think what they need at this point, more than any kind of prototype at that spot. But listen, he was ridiculously effective last year. Very, very productive. What, ran like a 4.42 or something in the 40. I think probably if you're looking for more of a, you know, high floor, lower ceiling guy, I think Javon Baker would make sense. You know, he does not have big brand name appeal because he played at UCF, I think the last 2 years, but he started his career at Alabama. So he has that pedigree.
Sure.
You know, has, I think, 4.5 speed, a potential jump ball guy. And then I think probably the, you know, everyone's favorite draft pick as soon as it's going to be made is Malik Washington. You know, everyone loves this little guy out of Virginia. You know, started his career at Northwestern, didn't do a whole lot, goes to UVA, and just becomes an outright terror. I think he had like 1,300 or 1,400 yards last year, was terrific after the catch. You know, again, another kind of pocket size Zay Flowers.
Yeah, from the ACC too.
Right. Maybe they take the, you know, a roll of the dice on a guy like Johnny Wilson, who is huge and ginormous. And some people have suggested maybe he just ought to move to tackle or move to tight end. I don't really agree with that, but not this past year, but the year before, he was like number one in college football in yards per route run. It wasn't a whole lot of volume, mm-hmm. but the fact that he was able to accomplish what he was able to accomplish the past 2 years with a kind of iffy quarterback there in Jordan Travis, you know, the Ravens might fall in love with him. And at the very least, you would think that he would be able to offer good run blocking, which is, I don't think, something that they have in abundant supply, that wide receiver spot. Surprisingly, for a guy his size, doesn't have great hands, which is kind of worrisome about just why a guy's focus would be so bad that someone with probably baseball gloves for hands just wouldn't be able to make a whole lot of catches. But you never know just what the Ravens make of these guys and their evaluations.
So the Ravens have 2 fourth-rounders. They have 113 and 130. 1 fifth-rounder, which is 165. 1 sixth-rounder, which is not their own, which I believe is the pick they got from the Jets as part of the Morgan Moses trade. That's 218. And then they have 2 seventh-round picks, 228 and 250, right near the end of the day. So draft picks up, what, 12 o'clock tomorrow? So we are back in this building in less than 12 hours.
Are you coming here?
I think so. I mean, I gotta see it through. I make it through the first three.
You gotta look for your puddings too.
Exactly. I mean, I did.
You demand satisfaction.
The chocolates weren't left, so I had to go for the vanillas. They were fine, but you know, I need my sustenance here, Jonas. I can't avoid it.
I gave you the canola cup.
You did, and I'm saving that for later. Don't worry. We will be back tomorrow. I'm thinking things are going to wrap up probably around 7:30 tomorrow. So maybe 8, who knows?
I think earlier. I don't think they're going to be very active in that 7th round.
All right, 9 p.m. is what we're saying for. At Jonas _ Schaefer is his Twitter handle. I'm at Paul Mancano. Jonas and Gianna Han and Kyle Goon have you guys completely covered on the BaltimoreBanner.com, where you can subscribe just $1 for 6 months. And please browse through all of the great articles and coverage that we have for you. Please give us a like, a thumbs up, a subscribe, all that good stuff. Thanks so much for tuning in. We will be back tomorrow after the conclusion of the 7th round.